Hey, Bob WP here, and welcome to Woo Biz Chat, a Do the Woo podcast show. Woo! Woo! We would like to thank our sponsor, GoDaddy. Build your client sites using the flexibility of a managed WooCommerce store from GoDaddy. If your clients are looking to expand their store, you can deliver them a fully customized WooCommerce site. Tell you more about GoDaddy later in the show, but let's get into the conversation.
Hello, everyone. This is Adam Weeks from WooBiz Chat. So glad you guys could all join us here today. I'm here with Emma Young. Emma, who are you?
I pointed to myself, but she can't see me in this shot anymore. Who am I? I am Emma. I am Emma Young, and I'm here with Adam.
Excellent.
That's my intro for today.
There you go. Yeah. All right. And today we are joined by Zach. He's going to be sharing with us about collaboration, effective and efficient collaboration. It's on everybody's mind. If it's not, it should be because, wow, it is so important in this business. If you are not collaborating with people effectively, you're wasting your time and frustrating people. And we thought, what better person to discuss this topic than to talk with Zach? Hey, Zach, welcome. Glad you're here. Could you tell us a little bit about who you are?
Thanks for having me, guys. I appreciate it. I'm really excited to share a little bit. My name is Zach Hendershot. I'm the CEO of a product called Maruti, which is focused on accelerating and accentuating collaboration, especially for agencies and anybody working on the web and building great products. So that's what I'm excited about. And I'm excited to share a little bit more about what my thoughts are on how we enhance that, grow it, and do really great collaboration on the web.
There you go. See, I told you Zach was the person to come in and talk about on this topic.
Think about it a lot. So let's do it.
Awesome.
Nice. So actually, we kind of just want to start off with like, what sparked the idea of Maruti? Like, was there a specific aha moment that made you think we need to fix this? And on a side quest, where does the name Maruti come from?
Yeah, I love that. I will give you both answers quickly here. So Maruti came from a long history I have had building websites of various sorts, all the way from, you know, marketing sites and e-commerce sites to complex, you know, custom software for Fortune 1000 customers and everything in between. In doing that over 15, 20 years at this point, I think I experienced what many of us experience, which is frustration with the process of just like really honing in on the details of what's being asked for or what needs to be done, how do you do that? And so in a lot of ways, right, that problem became too much to bear at a certain point. And we realized, hey, like, there's an opportunity here. And that opportunity is really in sort of like, how do we use the technology and the software that's available to us to solve this problem, make communication easier, clear, more direct, more precise, and bring more data into the conversation. I'm a big data guy. I love, like, when I'm an engineer by trade. And so, and I can point to something measurable, something quantifiable, I have better clear. So that's really the origin story of what we wanted to do, build a tool that collects data, makes it easily accessible, and drives clarity communication using that tool. The name Maruti comes from an ancient Japanese art in glasswork. And so it's but the idea is that it's a pane of glass, right? A pane of beautiful glass. You communicate what you're trying to do and how you're trying to do it. And that's sort of the inspiration of like creating a pane of glass on the web and, you know, marking it up and communicating clarity of communication. All that comes from, you know, sort of the artistry of glasswork in traditional Japanese.
Oh, that's so nice. I like that.
That's beautiful.
I know, right? Why can't we come up with stuff like that? Like, have a name is Jeff.
One thing left. I'm running on this one.
There you go. So there's so many of us have to collaborate with clients, and I'm sure you've had to do that. You don't get through this business building websites and building projects for other people without collaborating with clients. I'm curious if you have any stories that where it just, you know, went back and forth and back and forth with a client, kind of this accordion of, you know, like, oh no, back and forth. And an example where this felt so important, like I need this thing to exist.
Yeah. I mean, lots of examples, right? But I think there's a couple interesting ones that sort of forged in my brain the importance of this, right? And we all know agencies are live or die by the hour, right? The billable mm-hmm. hour in some capacity. And every hour you spend trying to align on what the ask is or what the request is expensive, right? And cuts into razor thin margins and, you know, all these different things from just a business operations perspective, but it impacts customer, you know, relationships and the trust that you build and everything. And so early on in my career, there were a couple of different instances that stick out to me. I mean, you know, we were building at the time an adventure travel website, and we had lots of different, for managing sort of like heli skiing trips and trips and all sorts of interesting stuff. They're complex products to sell, honestly, because every trip has different unique, you know, characteristics to it that you sell and, you know, bundle as a part of your package that you put in front of customers, and also how you operate them. And that's the genesis of the problem. You know, we were working with a small mom and pop whitewater rafting company here in Wave, Colorado. And, you know, they had a very unique model because, you know, you have to differentiate yourself. Mm-hmm. And they were selling, you know, specific trips where you could get premium services. And we were trying to like help them, you know, market and position these on the web and make them viable with all sorts of different configurable dropdowns. And, you know, we spent probably a week trying to hone in on, okay, there's this nuance in terms of, okay, these types of trips have this type of premium add-on for, you know, a custom meal on the water. And, you know, these are all the different options in terms of vegan, vegetarian, mm-hmm. all these different things. And like, we literally spent a week going back and forth trying to hone in on all the precise details of like, this trip has this, do this on this trip because it's in the middle of, you know, this national park, which can't be, when like, so many variables. And, you know, this was one operator out of the time we had like 50 different operators around the U.S.
Wow.
You know, all of this complexity was just a hard thing to, you know, verbalize through. And in the middle of it, they were getting frustrated because we weren't hearing them, right? Like, they're doing this every day. They know exactly how to operate. Like, this is not a mystery or confusing to them. To us, who manage hundreds of different trips, like, it's very confusing. And so, you know, that was an early stick out for me in my career where like, man, if we only had tools to better articulate and communicate the intention and the outcomes we want, I think there's a lot of, you know, a lot of better ways of managing the relationship. You know, obviously we ended up making that work, but it was long and arduous, broke a little bit of trust in like, who are these guys? Mm-hmm. Do adventure travel trips. They should know my business, but it did not seem like we knew their business plan because it was painful for everybody. So that wow to me for sure.
Okay. So like it sounds like that some clients want to be more heavily involved while others maybe want to like kind of just disappear until the last moment. Like, do you have any advice on balancing like how much do you involve clients without like slowing down the projects? And for the ones that want to disappear, do you kind of push to get more information? Is there a yin and yang?
It's an art, I would say, right? And it pains me because of my engineer background, like I, you know, it should be there. It's fixed, you know, this is how it works. But no, from my perspective, right, like I think there's a couple things to do. I mean, one is to make sure that you are, one, being really clear on the core things that you need, right? Regardless of whether you want to be engaged or not be engaged, like in order to do the best quality work for you, Mr. and Mrs. Client, like these are the things need unequivocally, and we'll get them early, we'll get them often, and we'll like set clear expectations around that. That doesn't work for things that you learn as you go through the process of working and understanding more about their business and what their needs are. And so, you know, I think the way that I think about it is let's make sure that we do set expectations that there are touch points, right? Maybe one client point be 3 hours, maybe one client once a quarter, but make sure you have a consistent touch point so you can pile up the things you need answers to, that you're, you know, aligning on the expectations, that you're just sort of consistently sort of staying in touch. I see where it fails is, you know, where you just lean into the fact that the client doesn't want, you know, just wants you to handle it all and take care of it. And then you go months without talking and you slowly grow apart, right? Like you slowly misunderstand their needs, alongside or the product in the direction that they're misaligned to. And then suddenly they show up in a meeting and they're angry, right? Because, or, you know, you didn't anticipate through some magical source.
Right.
You know, and then you lose a client, right? Or you lose revenue or whatever. And so for me, it's just consistency, good expectation, making sure you have touch points, regardless of whether they want them or not. It's, communicate the importance of why you have to, you know, be close to them and force their hand in some ways. It doesn't have to be every week, but it has to be consistent and reproducible.
I love that you talked about setting expectations. I feel that setting expectations is the difference between a good and bad outcome, in the sense that if people expect it to take a long time, then it's supposed to take a long time and they're not worried about it, versus I thought this was going to be a fast, quick, you know, type of a thing. And I would love to hear a little bit more about maybe best practices when it comes to setting expectations. You have clearly, with the helicopter client, been through that. Any best practices about setting expectations when you are beginning an engagement?
Yeah, early and often, right, is what I say, both internally and to myself. I mean, I think we fall into, and I'm going to point to myself, right, being like an engineer. I like to build and I like to execute and put stuff out there. But I think expectation setting really is like really being clear and communicative often around what you're doing, why you're doing it, what the outcomes are that we're trying to achieve, right, together. All of those things have to happen all the time. And so, you know, for me, it's often about how do we, one, set good expectations initially, and then how do we evolve those expectations materially and intentionally? And by that, I mean, I think we all who work in the space go into a project with a clear understanding, all right, this is what we're trying to do, this is what needs to happen. And then fast forward an hour sometimes, or maybe a week, and you learn everything that you thought was the right thing to do is not the right thing to do at all. And so, you know, in those situations, it's just, you have to force yourself to sit down and have the conversation around the changed expectations. That may not always be a great conversation, because what I've learned in my career so far is, you know, as the practitioner building the application or whatever, you know, things have to change based on what you heard and the things you learned about the business or whatever it is. But often the client doesn't understand what we understand. And so they think everything's perfectly great. What I told you last week is still relevant and needs to be delivered, and you just need to figure out how to deliver it. But we know there are lots of variables that go into doing that successfully. And so, you know, it's having hard conversations often and frequently, and with just transparency, that I found is the most effective way to just steer the client along with you as you go. And I know why why lots of people struggle with those conversations, because those are often hard conversations.
Sure.
You kind of have to push through it, because if you don't, you end up with poor customer relationships, lost trust, and, you know, again, lost projects and revenue, right? Like, for money. And I think, you know, the longer you build trust and maintain the winding path of expectation setting, I think the better outcomes you're going to get.
Yeah. So one last one before we move on from clients, because I feel like every agency kind of has like one nightmare project where communication just completely broke down. And without naming any names, do you have a story like that, that just like vacuumed everything out of you? And what did you learn from it?
Yeah. So everything I just told you, we did wrong. And yeah, I have a great example somewhat recently over the last year or two, where, you know, a lot of the work in expectation setting fell apart for a bunch of, you know, I would say defensible reasons, but in some ways not defensible, right? Because we know better. You know, a lot of it was, you know, we go into a big complex engagement, building, you know, a relatively complex piece of software, lots of integrations, lots of people involved, lots of, you know, unique user interactions, lots of complexity. And, you know, the client is really opinionated on how things done and how things should look at the end of the day. We knew early on, if we're honest with ourselves, that some of the, you know, the expectations at the foundation of how it's going to work and, you know, how things are going to be connected to other, you know, IT systems and whatever, were just pipe dreams in some ways. But we sort of convinced ourselves that we could figure it out, despite our early reservations that it wasn't going to work, and we should be setting clear expectations now that we need to pivot and change whatever. And we didn't, right? And we didn't, and it turned into a nightmare client, because, you know, the expectations were off. What we delivered at the end of the day, where it was not aligned to kind of where their head was at in terms of what they wanted, for all valid reasons, right? What they wanted still was not a valid thing to expect, but we didn't walk them through that winding path of expectation setting quickly and accurately, and we ended up in that state. And so that only continues to reinforce what I said previously, just around can't you miss hard conversations? Because when you do that, you know, those low grade hard conversations end up in a great relationship, versus not doing that, and then you have a bunch of high grade, really hard, really painful, really challenging conversations at the end. And that's not what you want. You want lots of little manageable, hard conversations along the way.
I like that. Yeah, lots of little conversations, difficult ones. They're not easy. It's not fun along the way. That's really helpful. Thank you. You know, as we kind of talk about this collaboration, that's the agency side. That's, you know, the people who are paying you, and you obviously need that to set expectations, that to go well. Let's transition, because you can't, sometimes you do this all by yourself, and good on you if you can do everything by yourself. I don't recommend that. I think it's better to work with, you know, a team when you can, and we have strengths. Any thoughts on working together collaboratively with a team? And let me specify this by, yeah, kind of best practices. And I would imagine some of the pain points, as I see it, are passing things back and forth, right? We're going to pass, like, okay, I finished mine, now it's your turn. What are some of the kind of pain points, and then getting to some of the best practices to dealing with those pain points?
Yeah. And what you called out, Adam, I think is really interesting. It's sort of the telephone game that we all hear about and talk about. Every time there is a handoff anywhere in your business, no matter how good you are, there is something lost in translation. And so for me, right, like some of the things to watch out for and how you translate those into best practices is essentially, like, one, how do you reduce the number of handoffs, right? How do you create an organization structure that allows you to have the fewest number of people service the needs of the, in this business, sort of the customer as possible without sacrificing the quality of the work or, you know, the fidelity of what you're trying to do. So for me, I think about that, you know, especially for larger businesses and complex clients, you can't just all service, you know, one person to one client. And so you have to think about the systems in which you minimize the risk. But my first step is, how do you reduce the number of people to the smallest practical list of people? Because there's less chance of a telephone game and something getting missed. The other side of it is, once you've done that, I think the other part is, how do you automate and systematize as much of those handoffs as possible? You can't do 100%, although with AI and other things, there's more and more tools available to you for automation. But I would say, like, you know, tools for managing and capturing the work, you know, not to point too much at some of what we're building right now, but capture tools to help, you know, systematize how you capture, what you capture, the data that you have available to you that does get passed from one person to another as you address issues and, you know, resolve issues for clients is important. And I would say organizational process. I know that's, you know, a term we probably don't want to hear a ton of, but like the way in which you structure your organization to communicate clearly, transparently, and then use the tools to facilitate that is the other kind of big best practice. And by that, you know, to be specific on what that means for me, that's, you know, clear expectation setting with your internal teams around turnaround times. And, you know, when you communicate or push an issue from a client from one organization to another organization, what are the steps you always take, right? And how do you train those? How do you make those as automatic as possible, so you don't have to think about it with their workflow tools or whatever? For me, the summary is just, how do you remove manual labor out of the system? Let people focus on what they do best, which is like their job, like they're, you know, designing the feature or implementing the feature or testing the feature or, you know, creating content or whatever it is, and automate the rest of it away.
Whether you're just starting to build that woo shop for a client or looking to expand or scale an existing site, GoDaddy's e-commerce hosting solution is there for you and your projects. Expand a client store with access to thousands of extensions, or scale big time with conversion tools, multiple staff accounts, an integrated POS, marketplace integrations, and discounted shipping rates, plus a lot more. And if you continue to manage your site, or you hand it over to the client, a single dashboard gives powerful tools such as online sales tracking and easy auto sync for all the store's inventory across the entire site. Plus, software, plugins, and extensions will be kept up to date, and regression and other testing is done continually to avoid site breakage. With that all said, keep your client sites humming along with e-commerce hosting from GoDaddy at GoDaddy.com.
I very much agree with like with what you said about like it's not only the tool that like matters, but it's also like, you know, the SOPs and the processes and everything, all the documentation that you have in place to really make the best of both of those things. But like nowadays, a lot of us work in more remote environments, and it's kind of it's easy to fall into the trap of like, you do this and I'll take this ticket and you do that one and you close that, instead of really collaborating together. Like, yeah. Do you maybe have some tricks or like, well,
it's hard. And I think that's what's interesting about sort of this transition to remote work as a default these days is it's, you know, gives us so many benefits for all the reasons everybody talks about, but it's harder to just naturally go and, you know, collaborate. And the reason I say things like SOPs and process and stuff is because, and I maybe would not have said that as much as I would have 3 or 4 years ago, because you sort of naturally fall into just like, you see the process play out, you just sort of mimic it over and over again. But when you're being remote, you have to be way more intentional about it. You have to like document it more, and you have to, because you have a remote employee and they don't see you kind of move the work through the system in the same way that you did when you sat next to them physically, you know, in an office. And so, you know, best practices for me is, you know, document more than you would have 3 to 4 years ago. You can use tools and use the features in those tools to create workflows and, you know, kind of like checklists and stuff that are automatically generated. I use, even in like Slack, has a bunch of newish tools that allow you to, you know, systematize and like create workflows and processes that I'm using more and more now, because, you know, the more you just like naturally fall into creating those steps when you're working remotely, and the more you make it easy to follow, that's the other thing that I struggle with personally, is like, I know how important the steps in the process is, but it's not easy for me to follow. I fall out of them. And so create the tools, leverage the tools you have to just like, you fall into doing it because it becomes a habit and a pattern. And then, you know, strip away the hard part of like hurdles to jump over to go and do it. Just like put it right in front of your systems, create, you know, workflows in Slack because everybody's already in Slack, you know, and avoid too many sort of external tools forcing process from the outside in. Try and create process from the inside out, so that sort of just becomes a natural course of how you do work. And the more I think, you know, it makes sort of that remote work and that remote collaboration just more natural, I would say. Nice.
On a personal note, with Slack, some of these new features, have you tried the templates? Like, what do you get from that?
Yeah.
What am I missing out here?
So what's interesting, right, is that the templates are a good example of what I was just saying, where the templates can, especially for agencies and, you know, service businesses, you do a common set of things for every client. There's lots of things unique, but there's lots of things you do consistently. And so the Slack template feature will allow you to set up, you know, common sets of people in a channel, common sets of documents and processes that you should follow to service the needs of the client. So, you know, we would use often templates that create sort of to-do lists and tasks that we want to make sure we're doing for every client that we service. We bring a new client in, we can set up a channel with a bunch of, you know, predefined stuff. And then we know each time that we're sending up a new client, we're not forgetting to, you know, do the basic stuff like, you know, onboarding contracts and whatever else, but also just like quarterly check-ins that we want to do for every client each time, right? Like if we don't get stuff templatized, we sometimes just forget to do it. And that's the problem.
But fair. I'm not utilizing it enough because I'm like, oh, I'll just use Google Docs for that. But you're right. Yeah, I couldn't just try it on there. I'll give it a go.
But not to reinforce a little bit of what I said earlier, right? Like we use Google Docs as well, but that's like outside of where we work every day.
So
sometimes. And so Slack, like, yes, you can do the same thing both places, but Slack is where we are all the time. And so it's natural to kind of have some of those processing tools right there, basically. That's basically what I was saying.
That makes sense.
All right. So we're still talking about, you know, collaborating with our coworkers. We all have this, we're trying to build this custom project together, working on helping people schedule helicopter tours or whatever it is. Tell me about a little bit when you're depending on someone to do their work and they're just not up to it. And like, what's the tendency like to jump in and do it for them? Or what happens when the people you're working with just aren't cutting it?
They're fired.
That's I guess that happens to you guys. It doesn't happen to me, but
yeah, that's hard, right? And especially in a services business and an agency, right? Like you're so dependent on so many other people. You know, in some ways, that's what makes the business hard.
And you're dependent. I would expand your question a little bit, Adam, beyond just sort of internal team members, but when the client doesn't do the things that you need them is also a common situation that we come across. For me, it really depends on the situation. But what I would say is accountability, like creating systems of accountability and clear expectation setting again. I'm going to like use it over and over again. What I've found in my time in this journey has been when I don't set clear expectations of what I need and when I need it, people let me down. Blame myself often, not that you can't expect people to sort of like connect dots and understand the context of what's going on or whatever. But, you know, I blame myself often in those situations because I fail to sort of be clear around, hey, Mr. or Mrs. sort of client, or hey, you know, teammate, I need you to do this thing, at least in this way, by Monday because of these reasons. And the reason I said because of these reasons is because, you know, I think the context matters. In the context of why this thing is important to be done by Monday helps people like prioritize, actualize, and sort of connect with the why. And some of that comes from, I have a 10-year-old daughter, and like some of that, she always is asking why I want her to do the thing, right? Like to clean her room or whatever. Is it all? Yeah. Like, why? Like I'm the only one living here. Like I just live, you know, and I'm fine with it. So why does it matter? Right. Like things. The minute I tell her the reasons why it matters, you know, at 10, at 5 is a little different, but at 10, she can, you know, connect the dots of like, oh, okay, sense, gives me some small amount of motivation to do the thing, right? But I think that works even in an accelerated way with more mature people, right? Like your teammates and your clients who have a much better appreciation for like the why and why it matters. And hey, this kind of, you know, more revenue, or it unlocks, you know, a critical path for a project that we need to get done or whatever it is. So that would be my best practice, is just clear expectations, give the context, and make sure they understand the why.
So you don't fire them first.
That's
definitely.
It would work very well together.
Yes. They don't do that one time. Then it's, you know, like you're out. But yeah.
That's good. Yeah. So like in a, I just keep coming back to like remote environments, because like those are actually like some of the core values that like I like to, like the principles I like to work with, like transparency, expectations. And like, I like what you said, like with the deadline as well. Like that's something different that we always like, we expect this, and we expect this in a realistic time. But what if you're not exactly clear about that, then there's some assumptions and things get a little crazy. But is there any way that like, I can't remember the name. Rooney, sorry. I was like, oh my God. Okay, I wish we could cut that out, but we're not. Just keep it in there. Does it, I can like fit into the workflow and kind of make some of this collaboration smoother?
Yeah, so that's really what we've been trying to do. So Rooney has been around for a couple of years at this point as a capture tool. And, you know, based on what I've said up to this point, right, like a part of what we're trying to do is to automate away the hard sort of data collection part. Because one part of the problem is just consistently getting everything you need to do what you're asked to do reliably. And so Maruti, up to this point over the last couple of years, has been a tool that allows you to strip away that mental overhead, right? Of like, oh, I need to capture the network traffic and the dev tools and the console logs and the, you know, capture the recording or a screenshot and, you know, all these different pieces of parts. That just gets handled automatically. Every request you make comes with all that stuff. And it's low mental burden, easy, simple, solves that part of the problem. Where we're pivoting a little bit towards right now is the other half of the problem, which is a little bit of what I was talking about, like automate as much as you can, right? What we are talking to agency owners and folks using Maruni in our customer base and potential customers is, that's great. Making that consistent, reproducible, and simple is great. We love that. That's valuable. Yes. But once we have that in our system, there's a whole bunch of manual labor, for lack of a better term, that goes into actually solving that problem, actually like fixing the issue, making the content update, making the site change, whatever the request is that comes in from your client. And so we're now pivoting authoritatively over to like, let's automate that with AI available at our disposal and sort of like deeply integrating into systems like WordPress. Like we can now take that request, understand the context of what's being requested, and in line with what I've been saying over the last 15 to 20 minutes, automate away a lot of the manual effort and labor of like
making the update and change directly in the system, providing a better customer experience, right? Because you're simplifying and speeding up the path to just get the stuff done and allowing, again, the people who are responsible for managing the site focus on the things that they're good at, which is not rote manual updates of websites, but more like, you know, crafting a design that meets the needs of the customers they're trying to attract with a website, or, you know, all the different unique things that are more specialized human activities than, you know, hours of manual labor going and updating, you know, sites and changing content and adding content blocks, you know, across the site that we can automate away now. If we combine the cash you're asking for with the action of doing that thing in a large majority of cases. So that's what we're trying to do, is to systematize and operationalize a lot of what I've been talking about.
I like that. Automate away. I think everything should be automated. Well, not everything, but a lot of things. So I'm going to just use that now from now on. Just automate away.
And my soapbox on this, right, and just to jump on a soapbox really quick around AI and a lot of this debate, right, is still very much believe, and we're executing on this, that AI is meant to remove the boring manual stuff to allow us to focus on the things that we do want to do and that we're uniquely valuable at and, you know, can do to build relationships and, you know, continue to like deliver outcomes and results. And that's what we're trying to do. So automate away the stuff that none of us like to do and are boring and are not at unique value, and let us do the things that we love to do and are uniquely good at.
Yeah. No, I love that. I have this idea of this in my head. There's this communication matrix of like what methodology do we communicate what type of information? And so text is good for certain things. Audio is good for other things. You know, a photo is worth 1,000 words. A video is really good. And I feel like Maruni is sort of this taking all those different modalities and then, the promise of AI to automate those things that I don't want to do it.
I talked to dozens and dozens of agencies in a month, and I hear over and over again, you know, what I love to do is work with clients, talk to clients, create visions, tell the big picture strategy story. What I hate to do is service my 15 retainer contracts with, you know, really one of them are like, add this content, you know, remove this. You know, add a content block from a new podcast that I want to, you know, present in a tabular list, like all of that stuff, like they don't like to do and don't want to do. And that's what we're trying to remove out of the system so they can do the things they like.
What about for people who like still rely on like spreadsheets and like emails and stuff and like don't really want to like, you know, step away from those types of workflows, you know, like what can we say to them?
You know, and it's funny you say that too, because I was talking to an agency owner yesterday and he said, you know, roughly what you said, Emma. He said, you know, I basically just use email threads and spreadsheets to track and organize my work because it just works for me. Comfortable with it. And, you know, I think there's going to continue to be folks who exist in that space, right? Especially in the lower volume space where, you know, you're doing, you know, a few a week or, you know, managing a few email threads a week. I think that, you know, it doesn't scale, but it's fine. And so to those people, I would say, to answer your question, I would say like, do what works for you, right? But what we're trying to do is, even for those small volume folks, we think that when we can automate a lot of the manual back and forth that you have to go through to go and execute on those email threads or that, you know, spreadsheet that you're managing, that it's worth kind of like pivoting to a system that allows you to sort of automate how you manage that, because the value of just automating away a lot of the manual work that those email threads or, you know, rows in a, you know, spreadsheet generate, then it's worth that sort of modality change, I guess, for lack of a better term.
Yeah.
The alternative, like, then we figure out how to work with those people, right? Integrate into those spreadsheets and, you know, read email threads and stuff as we go. Like those are, you know, things we can explore. But I think, you know, my worldview is the more that we can, you know, provide great value, the more people will drop the tools that are painful and slow. And we see that in every sort of, you know, over the last 2 decades in the technology space, you know, we've seen these, you know, manual efforts and manual tools start to fall away a little bit as things become easier and simpler, but there are always going to be people who just want to continue to use what they're comfortable with.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like how you said that. Like, it reminds me, in another world, I used to be a technology coordinator for a large public school. And which is a fancy way of saying I would go into teachers' classrooms and I'd remind them that they need to plug in their computer and things like that to make it work. And like you said, like some of them, the teachers were just going to do what they were going to do. Yeah. My job, I felt at its best, was to help them be comfortable with the technology they had and then to inspire them that there are better ways to do this. If you like doing what you're doing, I'm not here to change you. Do what works. However, I want to inspire you that there are better ways you can serve your students in the case of the classroom. And as you were thinking, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, and show the value, right?
Yeah.
Why doing that might benefit you.
Well, and that was what I was thinking about with Maruni. In a best case scenario, what is somebody who is not using Maruni? What are they missing out on? People who are designing these, you know, boutique, you know, websites or custom solutions, if they're not using a tool like Maruni or exactly Maruni, what are they missing out on?
Yeah, this is an interesting one. I'm going to hit people like where I think it hurts the most, which is you're missing out on revenue, right? At the end of the day, the way that we talk about it and the way that we think about it and the way that I think this, a product like Maruni really matters is because when you're, you know, when you're spending, I talked to another agency owner a few days ago who, you know, was spending like dozens and dozens of hours in a given month just servicing relatively rote, you know, manual tasks for a small set of clients. If you can do what took you dozens of hours in an hour in a month, then that's margin, that's revenue. That's, you know, more money in your pocket or more money to invest in your business or to, you know, to invest in the things you love to do. And so, you know, the blunt answer, I think, Adam, is like, you're missing out on your time and by extension, money. I think in a lot of other ways, right? Like there's some quality of life things you could point to and stuff, which is what a lot of tools out there, you know, point to. It makes things easier and simpler. But at the end of the day, all we care about, you know, is are we making the revenue we want to make at the end of the day? Is our business healthy? And that's really what we're trying to be very targeted on is how do we make you better, faster, more efficient? And by extension, deliver better experiences for your customers, which opens up new projects and new referrals and new everything else. Keep your business healthy and thriving.
So maybe you can give us a little peek into Maruni's roadmap and like what features that are coming out that you're most excited about that will help us with this revenue.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and we're in the middle of this pivot. So, you know, as we launch some of these features I just sort of described, you know, we're automation and workflow. This is hinting back a little bit of what I did say earlier today, just around like, all right, once you are able to do, you know, basic content edits, and then by extension, more and more complex changes across the site, we start to blend in some of these like website creation tools that, you know, website creation tools, I'm sure many of us have played with them at least, but, you know, for fun, are coming from the, from zero to 100. We're in the, you know, from 100 to 200, right? The evolution, the maintenance and the management of the site as it evolves and as the needs of the site. So we're addressing that part. More and more tools on our roadmap to continue to do more and more evolution of the sites, right? New pages, new sections, new capabilities on the site to meet the needs of the requests coming in from stakeholders, internal and external. The other thing that I think is really interesting, when you start to like really think about this technology and capability, think about SEO optimization, right? So you get a report from HubSpot, you get a report from SEMrush or whatever, of these 25 things to make your site more SEO optimized.
Graham.
We can take those as input and we can make those changes automatically for you. Tag updates, meta updates, title updates on the page, add some keywords across your site. All of that is within the realm of our technology to go and automate away for you directly into your site, right? So today you'd hand that to some web developer that's working on your site or, you know, maybe an external consultant or whatever. And again, you're paying, you know, relatively good money to go and do that thing. A lot of those tasks are just manual effort. We can automate them directly in your site. Some of those are strategic and, you know, and big picture thinking. We don't and can't and shouldn't automate that, but what the even the results that come out of that can be automated through the edit requests that come into our system. So, you know, we're looking at all the different ways that, you know, again, manual labor can be removed from the system, that we can things that ultimately really matter. And so we're just trying to invest in tools that help automate a lot of that.
Right. Nice. So we've talked about, you know, managing client expectations, keeping projects on track, working with your team remotely, smoothly, communicating with the clients, coworkers, and your team, knowing the why, and my favorite, automating away. So I think we've covered quite a bit, and I just want to thank you so much for your time and for teaching us about the industry and the impacts on our businesses. But where can people learn more about you and about Maruni and connect with you if they have more questions?
Yeah, absolutely. And thanks for your time. You can find Maruni at maruni.io, M-I-R-U-N-I.io. And you can email me at Zach, Z-A-C-H, at maruni.io, and find me on LinkedIn and all over the place from there. So love to talk to people, love to find problems to solve, love to figure out, of course, how we can use Maruni to solve some of those as well.
Amazing. And I just want a quick disclaimer. For all those people who think that maybe I dislike spreadsheets, I'm a spreadsheets girl. I love spreadsheets for everything. I made one for me and my friends today trying to go on a trip together. It was just a question. Don't come at me. I love
formulas. Maybe you could have used AI for that.
Well, you know, here's the personal connection there. My wife is an accountant with a CPA and she loves Excel and I love her spreadsheets. So feel her presence, you know, not too far down.
All right. Thank you so much. We appreciate everybody joining us for WooBiz Chat. Hopefully this conversation on collaboration, where we're setting expectations, where we're meeting client expectations and exceeding them. And thank you again, Zach, for joining us on this. And we hope that you join us again for WooBiz Chat here on Do the Woo. Everybody have a great day. Talk to you guys soon.
Hey, Bob WP again. Thanks for listening. And thanks to our sponsor, GoDaddy. If you've yet to subscribe, you can find us on your favorite pod app on the Fediverse, and to get all things Do the Woo at dothewoo.io/subscribe. So until the next time, take care.